Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday. My name is Lamo. Venerable Cherokee is out of town. I think her stepfather passed away, and so she's helping with the family. And Geshe-la is in a pilgrimage. He went to India to where Lama Tisha's teacher, Serling Pa, was. I think it's in Sumatra, where they have a lot of earthquakes. So anyway, that's where he is. So I volunteered to teach today. So usually when we get started, we do prostrations. If you're new to the center or you feel uncomfortable doing prostrations, you don't have to. You can just remain standing. But we prostrate not like to, you know, an all-knowing God or something like that. We do it. We prostrate to the holy images for all the efforts they have done to liberate themselves. They all started like us in samsara, going through, you know, all these lower realms and so forth. And they worked very hard. They found a teacher. They studied. They practiced. And they eventually slowly, you know, purified all their defilements and liberated themselves and then attained enlightenment later. So you can think of it that way. Also, there are teachings in those texts right there. There are all the 84,000 teachings of the Buddha and their commentaries. And so we're also prostrating to that. And also you can think about prostrating to your own Buddha nature, the potential that you have to enlighten yourself. And the benefit of doing prostrations is not only an antidote to pride, but also for every atom of your body that is involved with doing prostrations, even that those that don't touch the ground actually touch the floor, all give or create the cause for you to be born as a human being. So if you'd like, you could please join me in some prostrations. Geshe-la also recommends that we circumambulate the stupa. It's full of relics. And just even one circumambulation, even if you're talking to someone, has incredible merit. Also, to turn the prayer wheels on the other side of this wall, they're full of mantras. So very easy way for purification practice. So if you turn to the base sheet in our white prayer book, let's chant Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. Then the four measurables in English, and then in Tibetan, right below there. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta om mune mune maha munaye soha. Tayata om mune mune maha munaye soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So we're going to chant this, and what we're chanting is the four measurables in Tibetan. San Chem Tam Che De Wa Dam De We Gyu Dam Dem Pa Ju Chi Du Nya Dong Du Nya Gi Gyu Dong Dwell Wa Ju Chi Du Nya Me Pe De Wa Dong Mi Dwell Wa Ju Chi Nye Rin Cha Dong Ni Dong Dre We Dong Yom La Ne Par Ju Chi. Then if you turn the page to the pink sheet, and at the bottom you see a couple of mantras. So let's chant Chen Rei Zig's mantra 8 times, and then Green Tara's mantra 7 times. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. And then Green Tara's mantra right above that 7 times. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Ha. 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 Okay, the children are welcome to go to their classes. If your child has never been to a class, would you please accompany your child so you know where to pick him up? Okay, so I'd like to thank you all for coming to the center. I hope it will be of benefit to you. I know it's a beautiful Sunday. The fair is open, you know, so perfect. But you decide to come here and attend the teaching. So from the moment you left home, you have been accumulating incredible merit. So let's start. We're going to do a bare attention exercise. It's not what they call a meditation. It's very simple. And so, but we should probably try to get into our 7-point posture. So if you're not familiar with that, you just, if you're sitting on a cushion, you try to keep your back higher than your knees. So your knees are, your legs are crossed. If you're sitting in a chair, you can cross them, or you can have your feet flat on the floor. And if you don't quite reach, or if the floor is uncomfortable, you can put a cushion under your feet. Your hands are right on left with thumbs touching, or else you can have them on your knees, whatever is comfortable. Your back is straight, shoulders are level, elbows are away from your torso, sort of allow air to come through. Your head is tilted slightly forward, the top of your head. Your eyes are sort of gazing unfocused in front of you or slightly closed. And your tongue is resting at the top of your palate behind your front teeth. And you try to relax your jaw, your neck, your body. If you feel any pain, you can shift if you like. You bring your focus to the air going in and out of your nostrils. The air going in and out. And don't follow it all the way into your lungs. Just keep it right there at the tip of your nose. And if you like, you can mentally note in with the inhalation and out with the exhalation. And if a thought, emotion pops up, or if you hear sounds, then just label it as a thought or a sound and bring your focus back to your breath. Just don't follow it. Don't give energy to it. Don't identify with it. Just observe them like a tourist. So today's, I'd like to lead a discussion on the 16 guidelines topic of contentment. And so I'd like to read what His Holiness says in The Art of Happiness. Our ultimate aim in seeking more wealth is a sense of satisfaction, of happiness. The very basis of seeking more is a feeling of not having enough, a feeling of discontentment. That feeling of discontentment, of wanting more and more and more, doesn't arise from the inherent desirability of the objects we are seeking, but rather from our own mental state. Greed is an exaggerated form of desire to obtain something, but it is not satisfied by obtaining. Therefore, it becomes sort of limitless, sort of bottomless, and that leads to trouble. One interesting thing about greed is that although the underlying motive is to seek satisfaction, the irony is that even after obtaining the object of your desire, you are still not satisfied. The true antidote of greed is contentment. If you have a strong sense of contentment, it doesn't matter whether you obtain the object or not. Either way, you are still content. Feelings of anger and hatred arise from a mind that is troubled by dissatisfaction and discontent. So you can prepare ahead of time by constantly working toward building inner contentment and cultivating kindness and compassion. That brings about a certain calmness of mind that can help prevent anger from arising in the first place. So that was a lot of information. So just to repeat, so when we desire something, we have to realize that it inherently, it's, you know, it's not desirable. We are adding qualities to it. We think that it's desirable because, you know, of something that we are seeking, and it really has something to do with your own mental state, not anything that comes from the object itself. If it were desirable, then that would mean everyone in the whole world would like it. They would like it all the time, and it would stay, you know, the same. It was like that from the beginning and will continue ever after. So that's probably not too many things that are have that property. And also he said that, you know, anger and hatred arise from a mind that is troubled by dissatisfaction and discontent. So it's, you know, as I said this morning, it's really very hard for us to work with our anger when it arises. So it's a good idea to try it before that ever happens. You know, while we're still, sort of even-keeled, you know, nothing has really happened. No one has angered us. No situation has not come up. We're sort of, you know, in our routine. And then we try to cultivate kindness. For example, when we first wake up in the morning, we can have that motivation to try to practice inner contentment, cultivate kindness to everyone before we get angry or before hatred arises and so forth. Because that just comes, you know, just in an instant sometimes. So in Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, Pabongka Rinpoche is quoted as explaining one of the six types of suffering in samsara is the bane of being unsatisfied, is what he calls it. And here's what he says. Samsaric happiness is like drinking salt water. No matter how much of it you drink, it does not satisfy. Suppose a man has but a single coin. He will think, when will I get 10 coins? When he gets 10, he wonders when he will get 100. If he ever does, he'll wonder when he will get 1,000. No matter how many he gets, he will not be satisfied. As the Great Place Sutra says, O King, if a man were to receive all celestial pleasures, all human pleasures, it would not be enough. He would seek even more. Let us take the example of a celestial and human happiness. King Matvata ruled over the four continents and the celestial regions, yet he was still unsatisfied. Eventually, his merit ran out. He fell to this continent, Jambudvipa, and breathed his last. Pleasures do not satisfy, and there can be no greater sorrow than this. If you ruled over one land, you would think, if only I ruled over two. You would not be satisfied, no matter how many you ruled, no matter how much wealth you get, you still wonder if you can get more, and you are prepared to wear yourself out to achieve this. If you lack contentment, no matter how much wealth or how many possessions you have acquired, you will be no different from a beggar. Once in India, Surata, the beggar, found a priceless jewel and said he must give it to another beggar. And he gave it to King Prasenajit, saying, O King, you lack contentment, and so are the poorest. So if you are content, you may not have any possessions, but you're still rich. And Nagarjuna says in the letter, always be content, though you have no property. If you know contentment, you have the purest wealth. So Pabongka Rinpoche summarizes, in other words, if you are content, your dissatisfaction is boundless. Discontent and dissatisfaction do the most damage. So all this sounds very sort of disappointing and very negative and hopeless. But, you know, so it's just a state of mind. You know, it's an inner quality. And, you know, we practice contentment, as I said this morning, very easily, often. So, for example, if you're going on an overseas trip, you have to pack your belongings, and so you don't want to pack up all your furniture, your rugs, and your summer clothes. And if you're going to a winter place, you know, you just pack a few things in your suitcase. If you want to go, for example, on a hiking trip in India or Nepal or someplace, and especially if you know you have to carry that with you all the time, you may want to just, you know, carry something in your backpack. And so there you are, you're paring down, and you're perfectly content with what you have, even though you don't have all that stuff that you normally have every day. And then you have to sit in this plane for hours and hours and hours, seems like days, to get to India or Nepal, but you're perfectly fine because even though you're uncomfortable, because you know that in the end you're going to get off that plane and you're going to have a wonderful time at your pilgrimage or this wonderful place that you're visiting. And so there you are, you're already practicing contentment. And then when you, for example, we move from, from your home maybe to a smaller place, or you have to fit everything in a trailer that you're going to, connect to your car. So you can't fit, everything. And even if you do, you're just totally amazed at how much junk you have accumulated over the years. So then you want to get rid of it, or you want to give it away, sell it, throw it away, whatever. And you're perfectly content with that. So we do, practice contentment often. So now what I like to do is a meditation from Lama Zopa Rinpoche's book, How to Practice Dharma. So if you get into your comfortable position, try to relax the tension in your body and bring your focus back to your breath, going in and out. Think of an object that you are really attracted to. Something you want, but you don't own yet. For example, it could be jewelry, an expensive watch, some kind of computer equipment, like an iPad, iPhone, whatever, a new car or motorcycle, a dream house, whatever you really want, an object that you really want. Visualize that you have it in your possession. You have enough in your savings, so you bought it. It's yours now. Watch how your mind reacts. Do you feel pleasure? Does owning this object make you feel like a different person? Check whether your mind is attached to that pleasure. Analyze the pleasure. Is it peaceful or unpeaceful? Calm or uptight? Do you want to show others this new possession? How would they react? Or perhaps you want to hide it. Do others view you differently because you have this new acquisition? What do you have to do to take care of it, to safeguard it? Would your mind be unhappy if the object changed in some way, or you lost it? Imagine the object catches on fire. It is red hot and melting or burning. You have to let it go. It's gone. How do you feel now? How did your mind react? Now bring your focus back to your breath going in and out. And bring your awareness back to the room. Okay, now I'd like to do a group activity. I need help of every one of you out there. and to think of an experience in your life or someone else's life that illustrates contentment. What are ways to give rise to contentment? So I'm only giving you a certain amount of time, about 10 minutes. So I need small groups. Maybe three or four, but don't leave anyone out. If you see someone sitting alone, be sure to invite them into your group, and then I'll ring the bell when the time is over. So please split into groups.
Knowledge in my brain and then not practicing it or just putting it into action. I just want to read and read and study and study.
I have just cut off.
Oh, yeah.
I need to take the book. I'm taking the book. I have to cut off.
Yeah.
No more.
Because if you don't, like, put it into action, things you already know, I mean, you know, then you're not ever going to really know it. My dad is a teacher, and he's no better. You know, I mean, whatever subject you're teaching, you don't actually know it until you start teaching it to somebody else. And then it's like you're content with your amount of knowledge, and then you go look for more if you need more later. But, you know, that kind of, like, contentment with yourself, because then you find out, like, how much you don't know, even though you thought you knew so much. You know?
I like to learn.
And so from my perspective, like, I feel like that's not, you know, for me, when I'm not content to be, you know, having the knowledge that I have
Yes, very well.
No,
Like there's a regular Buddha, and then they have a rational aspect. They have a peaceful aspect. And then those aspects are
right.
Very simple. Visible one is, you look at that one as an embodiment. That's actually practicing when you look at green flower would be a shame. You will get up and go to that and you're missing out on it. It's kind of like that. You'll never learn a lot.
Okay, it's time to come back to the group. Sorry to have to make you stop. I saw a lot of laughter going on and people enjoying their conversations. So, you know, all of us are on different stages in the path, and we can all use everyone's help in progressing. So I invite people to talk about what you discussed or shared with your group. Anybody want to be the first one?
Well, let's make sure he walks back and forth a lot. My name's Jim Scott, and anyway, what I shared was the contentment I get from volunteering with a cardiac rehabilitation unit, and when a patient actually completes the program and takes a special time just to come up to you and say, thank you very much, I really appreciate what you've done for me. You have no idea how that feels. That is a high level of contentment. And sort of it speaks to karma. You know, you put something positive in, you get something very positive back. But contentment, yes.
Thank you. Anyone else? No one else? I saw a lot of conversation going. I'm going to make Tim work.
We found ourselves having a difficult time finding moments of contentment at first. And then the discussion led to mindfulness. If, you know, the practice of mindfulness actually making us realize those moments of contentment, how they're there a lot, as you had pointed out with the airplane. It's just a matter of being aware of those moments of contentment. And if we're not mindful on a moment-to-moment basis, those moments of contentment slip by us without us noticing. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you don't notice all the positive, you know, things that have you, situations that you're in. You just take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
That's good. Should have made you walk over there to me.
I just thought of one that I didn't share with the group, but the first one I shared with the group was, of course, pretty simple for mothers, is when your baby's first home from the hospital and they're healthy and everything's great and everybody's out of the house and you don't invite anybody over to see them and you just are hanging with your kid. That's pretty sweet. But what just occurred to me was when you said we're trying to find something is there's so many moments that aren't. And so it seems like contentment for me is when I get my way. No, I don't mean like that. When everything's going your way, when things are smooth, when things are easy, when things aren't falling apart, when things are just okay, when life is easy, when there's no struggles, when you have enough money, and so we're waiting and waiting and waiting to feel content, and that's when our way feels good. And so I was just thinking of little things, like I just have some kind of spasm in my finger. I don't know what it is. So I've been trying little funny things to say, like, when it hurts, can I be content then? So that's what, like, no big deal. So that's the kind of challenge that's better than waiting for everything to be perfect, because I haven't found that quite yet. Where'd Tim go?
So we kind of talked about a couple different things, but one of the things we talked about, contentment as a process, and somebody said that he thought it was easier to be content when he was younger and how it took much more practice at this point, and how coming here is practicing and being made aware of it, because it's there, but you have to really pay attention, as other people had said. And then there was an interesting share about somebody who works in the prison facility and how so many prisoners consider themselves much more content now that they're in prison, because they've had time to work on themselves and understand behaviors and other people as compared to when they came in, and how they're very content to be there. And that's really good food for thought for me, because how painful things can lead to contentment. But again, I'll speak for myself. I think everything that I've ever had that's worth having, I have to practice on it. It just doesn't come, especially the older I get, if I have hard habits to break. So there was a lot of good things that were said here.
Thank you. Anyone on this side of the room? No.
Okay, we need a longer microphone.
I lost it. I have the app for the 16 guidelines on my phone. Just so if you're craving something, this is a good thing to crave. But success doesn't work. But in the short definition of contentment in the 16 guidelines is living with a quiet satisfaction, being present rather than grasping for the future, and finding balance. And I think that I looked at that after we had our discussion and found that that was sort of some of the things that we were saying. For me, it's getting better at trying to live in the moment, so that when I review the past or look forward to the future, that I'm sort of balanced and feeling comfortable with that process. Then.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hey, this side of it.
I think that our group all agreed on one thing, that we find contentment in helping others and also in just giving to others. When we're giving to others, we're not focusing on what we don't have. We're focusing on giving others what they need, which I think is so much more important. You're not gaining anything but just happiness in helping others. And whether it's being with your children or being with your family or helping animals or just helping anyone, that just gives you an immeasurable amount of community and contentment, and you can't put any price on that. So I guess before you go to a store and you think, I want this or I want that, you know, really think about how much lasting joy will that give you.
Okay, thank you.
I shared in my group that I have a problem being content with knowledge and wanting to always seek out new knowledge and read and study and know more. And I was talking to my dad about it, and he's a teacher in his specialty, and he said that just teach somebody else and then you'll be content with what you know, and then you'll be more clear of what you don't know. And so you're not always seeking just kind of more and more and more, but you're seeking for clarity. And so there's not like a discontent with what you don't know.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you very much for sharing. Those are really good points. So one of the things that, you know, gives rise to dissatisfaction is having unrealistic expectations, because that, you know, ends in disappointment. You have certain expectations about
this new item that you wanted, maybe you were thinking about whatever it was, jewelry, car, watch, whatever, and you, you know, have this expectation that it's going to keep you happy for a while, and then it, you get disappointed, or it just wears away, and you need to start looking for something else. So we, you know, and for example, in our relationships, we might also project certain qualities that aren't there. Like we may think that this person that you're with, your significant other, is perfect, beautiful, handsome, whatever, and then you expect that person to also feel the same way about you, thinking that you're perfect, that you're beautiful forever and ever. So, you know, you have all these unrealistic expectations, and you can also have that with the Dharma. You might think, well, today my mind is completely negative, and I will meditate this afternoon, and by tonight I'll just be a Buddha. So that's a little bit too, you know, unrealistic. So Geshe-la says that, you know, we're living in samsara in an imperfect world. And also we will make mistakes until we reach enlightenment. So, you know, we can sort of try to tone down those expectations. So there's nothing wrong with being happy. You know, everyone deserves to be happy. And, you know, the problems that we have with these cravings and these desires is that they're the things that we're seeking, that we think that will give us this pleasure, is completely unreliable. And we become disappointed. We have false expectations. So instead of, you know, when we have contentment, it only comes when we have acceptance and not expectation. So I'd like to quote do some more. Quote, His Holiness and Pabongka Rinpoche state that contentment or satisfaction in life is developed through mind training or by transforming our mind. When peace and contentment reign in the mind, we're always happy, even if external conditions are not ideal. The body can be healthy, but without peace of mind, no happiness is possible, not even under the best conditions. So how do we secure this peace of mind? It won't appear by wishing. Familiarity breeds contentment. So this brings to mind two stanzas that Geshe likes to quote. It's from Shantideva's Guide to a Bodhisattva's Way of Life, Chapter 6 on Patience. This is verse 10. Why be unhappy about something if it can be remedied? And what is the use of being unhappy about something if it cannot be remedied? And verse 14. There is nothing whatsoever that is not made easier through acquaintance. So through becoming acquainted with small harms, I should learn to patiently accept great harms. So that, for example, getting used to, you know, extreme heat or extreme cold, you know, you just let your body become accustomed to it. For example, I knew a family that was going to move to Alaska. So they wanted to get their, you know, bodies acclimatized to the cold. So they would run around in short sleeves and 30-degree weather and say, this is wonderful. You know, this is summer. You know, they would do that just to get ready for their move to Alaska. And then you can also know, you know, for example, you hear about this all the time in the news. Someone's house was blown away by a terrible tornado, or their house burned down, but they're all fine. They say, we all got out of alive. That's all that's important. So that's, you know, extreme sense of contentment, you know, great practitioners there. And so that brings to mind, you know, the basis about impermanence. You know, like the house blowing away and so forth. All things and events are subject to change. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche states, all causative phenomena, our life, our body, our mind, our self, our possessions, our relatives and friends, all other people are changing. Not only day by day, minute by minute, and second by second, but every tiny moment. They do not last for a fraction of a second, because they are under the control of causes and conditions. They are in a state of constant decay and can cease at any time. This is the nature of our life. So that sounds really depressing. But, you know, when you think about, you know, what Geshe-la also says, about having a precious human life, we have a lot to be not only contented, but, you know, just full of joy and strength and power. Because in this precious human life, we have the ability to liberate ourselves from samsara, from all this suffering, and eventually become enlightened. And, of course, in the practice of Tantra, there are many people who have been able to do this in 3 years and 3 months. And in the Lama Dzong Kapa tradition, the Ganden lineage, they say 12 years or 3 months, 3 years and 3 months. So, you know, we should rejoice that we have this precious human life. We have the leisure and opportunity. For example, we have intelligence. We have our brain. So, you know, unlike an animal, we're able to grasp all these things. We'll explain karma to you, or we'll explain impermanence to you, and you'll grasp it. You'll understand it. And then you'll be able to practice it. You can, you know, go back and think of ways to meditate on it and so forth. But, you know, dogs are fairly intelligent, but you know, they can't read. You know, it's very hard for them to do that. And then, of course, we could have been born, you know, with limited intelligence, retardation. But we haven't, you know. We have this intelligence. So even though, you know, each one of us might have, you know, more or less of an IQ, it's still, we have this brain. We can distinguish good teaching from bad teaching, you know, good virtuous actions and non-virtuous actions. We can see that. So we have that intelligence. And not only that, we've met the Dharma. It's still you know, pure. It hasn't been untainted. It's still complete. We have the complete path to enlightenment. We have teachers, amazing teachers, enlightened teachers. We've got Lama Tsongpa Rinpoche. We have Geshe La, who can teach the whole path to enlightenment. He's doing that right now. He's teaching Salam Rim to us. So that's another opportunity. And so the teachings still are here. They're untainted. And also, we have the time, we have the leisure to study and practice it, we have that intelligence, and we have a community that who can support us, not just one another, mentally, physically, financially, but you also do so for the Sangha, for most of the Sangha, who need sponsors. So we live in this very rich life with great opportunity, you know, because we are human. And even among humans, we're living in a land of freedom. We have freedom to practice any religion that we like. Women are allowed to go to school and have the education. You know, we're not under the Taliban rule. The teachings, for example, if we were in a barbarous land, we could be in like a place where there's a battle zone. You know, it's very hard to, you know, meet the teachings there, especially because many of them are not Buddhist lands, like in the Middle East. You know, they're struggling, like in Africa, they're struggling just to be able to eat, to have water, clean water, and so forth. So we have a great deal of opportunity here. So we have the right circumstances. So all we have to do is put our minds to it, you know, and take the teachings and learn it, because wisdom is liberation, as Geshe La says. So all we have to, he said, we have to study. We have to learn, and then we understand, you know, why is this happening? You know, why are bad things happening to me? You know, why is this person like this, and why am I like that, and so forth. So, you know, if we don't do it, then there's no greater stupidity. You know, just to throw our lives away and not do it. You know, we know that it's right here. It's like a treasure, like a wish-granting jewel. It's better than that. You know, wish-granting jewel could only give us things like possessions, like objects, and so forth. But it won't do anything to give us a better rebirth, for example. So Lama Tsongkhapa says, in lines of experience, and this he's
giving this to a student, a whole many, many stanzas, but this one is, "This opportune physical form is worth more than a wish-granting gem. You only gain its like just once. So hard to get, so easily destroyed. It's like a lightning bolt in the sky. Contemplate this and you will realize all worldly actions are but winnowed chaff, and night and day you must extract some essence from this life. I, the yogi, practice this way. You, wanting liberation, do the same." And it can be just as simple as just circumambulating the stupa. It's just incredible purification practice merit just to do that, just one time. Just amazing. Just go home without doing that, then, you know, it's not a good idea. And then never coming back, never practicing the teachings, you know, it's just like just throwing your life away. So what I'd like to do is end with a meditation. It's a meditation on Chen Reizik. And if you are uncomfortable with that, you can use any other image of universal compassion that you like. It could be Jesus Christ. It could just be this wonderful light, whatever. So you get into your position and to relax in it and bring your focus to your breath. Chen Reizik is a Buddha who embodies the immeasurable universal compassion of all enlightened beings. He's mentioned in one of the sutras, Avalokiteshvara, as a bodhisattva. He had so much power he could go into the hell realms and just kick over this huge cauldron of fire and then make the place look like a pure land. It's amazing compassion and power. So visualize in the space in front of you at the level of your forehead, Chen Reizik, the Buddha of pure universal compassion. Chen Reizik's body is of white light, dazzling like freshly fallen snow. His face is peaceful and smiling, gazing at you and at all the beings surrounding you with an expression of perfect love and compassion. He is sitting in the full lotus posture on a white moon disc that rests upon an open lotus. He wears exquisite silks and precious ornaments. Don't worry if the image does not appear clearly with all the details. The most important thing is to feel that Chen Reizik, or whatever image you wish to use, is actually there in front of you. That you are in the presence of a manifestation of pure, universal loving kindness and compassion. He completely accepts you just as you are, loves you unconditionally, and is compassionately dedicated to helping you for all of time until you are free and enlightened. As soon as you think of him, he is there.
This is because he sees your pure Buddha nature, and thus he knows that your negative qualities are transitory and not who you really are. Try to feel Chenrezig's forgiveness and compassion for you. Visualize streams of pure white light flowing from Chenrezig into you, filling every cell and atom of your body. The essence of this light is his immeasurable loving kindness and compassion. It purifies all the negative aspects of your body and mind, sickness, and other physical problems. All your past harmful thoughts and actions, and your habitual negative tendencies, especially those that are obstacles to immeasurable compassion. The light completely fills you with love, compassion, wisdom, and all other positive qualities. Your body feels light and blissful, your mind peaceful and clear. The light from Chenrezig also radiates out to all the people and beings sitting around you, purifying their negative energy and filling them with bliss. Their minds are filled with positive energy, especially compassion and loving kindness. Chenrezig melts into white light, which dissolves into you. Imagine that your mind merges indistinguishably with Chenrezig's mind in an experience of complete purity, tranquility, and bliss. thank you very much, everyone, for sharing all your ideas. We really are benefiting from them. So if you'll turn to the first pink sheet, we'll read the dedications. But as you are looking for that page, I'll read the prayer list. Prayers for happy rebirth, Geshe Lobsang Sherub, all those killed by natural and man-made disasters, all the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom, Winifred Deutsch, Eugene Flynn, Anita Krauss, Jacob Meadows, Bill Mixer, Maya Foreman Rogers, Bobby Stott, Enik Batar, Zaren Sodol, Cleo the Cat, Norbert the Cat, Job Search, John Pell, Roseanne Barona, Justin Kelly, James Zillig, J.H., and Sarai. Prayers for health and well-being. Khyabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Lobsan Chodron, Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Venerable Chirkila. All those harmed by natural and man-made disasters, for the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Jim Barnes, Becky, Lilo Cardarelli, Herb Cunningham, Dimitri Diamandopoulos, Willow Deitch, Richard First, Mary Lou Flynn and Denise Flora, Mildred Gooch, Christina Harrison and family, Francis Hayashi, Leslie and Joan Inman, Kenny Jackson, Buddy, Helen Kasanoff, family, Lenita Krauss, Nicole and Tanya Lamont, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Jason Lentz, Nelson Mandela, Tom McGinnity, Gul Mustafa, Jay Pandya, Pilar and Orphans, Aunt Polly, family of Maya Foreman Rogers, Rex Ross, Eileen Rubin and family, Dr. Albert Sontz, Rosemary Cease, family of Bobby Stott, Lobsang Topden, and Barbara Tai, Steve Wakefield, Dion Washington, Dorothy Wirtis, Suzanne Williams, Judith Wormser, homeless dogs in Romania, and that the people involved will be empowered to make humane decisions on their behalf, dolphins slaughtered in Japan, Dorje and Kadro the pigs. If you have any names you'd like to add, would you please say them now? May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrei Zigtenzen Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion. To the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. So now let's chant seven of the Green Taurus Mantra for Geshe's long, healthy, happy life and for his safe return. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.